There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Because that's what I'm trying to adjust for this episode.
What?
Because it's not fully Enfield, crooked feet. Like,
there's a ghost in the house now.
No, it's. I wish it was.
I know.
This is way more like, again, like, sorry. Oh, I interrupt your ghosting there. Oh, sorry. I just want to pop around. See if you had a poltergeist over here next door. Oh, no. That's fine. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt then.
It's because you're classist. Because Enfield is a working class, and this story is more middle class.
Well, all of the people were surprisingly, like, not out of Alice in Wonderland's court that I'm used to.
I think it's a fun story. I love a bunch of British knockers.
We all do.
We all do. Welcome to the last podcast. On the left, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Class War Henry Zabrowski.
Oh, sorry. Let me make sure. One check a bit of your British knockers here. Make sure that they're all full of berries. Call the doctor.
And we have Ed, British knockers Larson with us as well.
Yeah, let me see your knockers here.
British Eddie kills sex workers.
That
is the real Jack the Ripper.
Turn into some sort of mythological character.
Can we subtitle this?
I just feel like the subtitles themselves would have to be blurred.
Today, we are starting a two-part journey into the land of the spooky. It's the Battersea Poltergeist, part one. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
You guys were sick of Nazis.
Yeah.
Sick of Nazis.
We wanted to come back with something a little more lighthearted.
This is goofy.
There's only one dead child in this whole series.
Wow. Last time we had millions.
That's true. I took it down from millions to one. I heard you. I listened. I see you.
But for this poltergeist tale, I honestly view this as more of a Carrie.
Yeah, it's Carrie. Yeah, it is... Carrie, there's a lot of telekinesis involved. There's a young girl at the center of all this. But we'll, let people decide for themselves what they think about it.
We don't care, actually.
So in 1956, in the Battersea district of London, a 15-year-old girl named Shirley Hitchings began a 12-year association with a mischievous and sometimes violent poltergeist named Donald. But as opposed to other slow burn poltergeist stories that take months, if not years, to be told, this story broke incredibly quickly, and the coverage made both Donald and Shirley national sensations in the infamously obsessive British press. Now, while Donald the Poltergeist did indeed send objects flying through the air, and while it did drive Shirley's family to the brink of insanity with its incessant knocks and taps, the thing that set Donald apart from other poltergeists was his prolific communication with the world of the living. Through methods that were sometimes clear, sometimes mysterious, and sometimes very silly.
Very silly indeed.
Donald the Poltergeist was a prolific writer of messages and letters to an almost overwhelming degree. As such, the main psychical researcher in this story, a man named Harold Chibbett, made the messages Donald's central characteristic when Chibbett wrote about the case. The title Chibbett chose, however, was extremely underwhelming. His book, which he spent years writing, he had years to come up with a title for this, was called The Poltergeist That Can Write.
Well, don't worry, his previous book, do you ever read The Frankenstein That Can Set?
Was very, very slow. I prefer The Werewolf That Can Mount.
Wait, that's different.
Well, this is 1956, after all. It's a good two decades before London's other infamous teenage girl poltergeist case, Enfield. So the paranormal community had not, in my opinion, found their flair for the dramatic, because there are far better hooks to this story than Donald's fucking communication skills.
Well, it's very indicative of the way the British would go about investigating these stories.
Very matter of fact.
Very matter of fact. And also, like,
am getting embedded. This is the guy, this guy, Harold Chibbett, would be sort of the proto guy to be embedded amongst the family. And the Jeff the Mongoose story, if you remember, which also took place 2 decades before this, that kind of like set a little bit of the flavor of what could be like ghosty entertainment in the news in the UK. And they liked it. But Jeff the Mongoose sadly never set an old woman on fire.
And Jeff, it's just a talking mongoose, right?
It's just a talking mongoose. This one does a lot. Donald does a lot more shit.
Yeah. Jeff the talking mongoose said that he did it for the devilment. Mm-hmm. Donald the poltergeist did it for the devilment.
He did it.
Yeah.
Man, I want to party with this talking mongoose.
You do. You do. Jeff is cool. But the problem is that Jeff, he does tend to hang out with types like Donald.
Yes. Mm. Well, as far as hooks go, Donald the poltergeist was, as I mentioned, violent and sometimes dangerous. If you believe the stories, Donald was a pyromaniac, and the antics surrounding this haunting had dire real-world consequences. See, even if the haunting was simply the machinations of a highly imaginative 15-year-old girl named Shirley, they still actively contributed to the death of Shirley Hitching's grandmother. Furthermore, as far as the poltergeist identity went, Donald ultimately claimed that he was the uneasy spirit of a French prince who had drowned in the English Channel after escaping the French Revolution following the guillotine execution of his father, King Louis XVI. And concerning what Donald wanted, his main motivation seemed to be to connect Shirley Hitching's with various young 1950s British TV actors with the ultimate goal of obtaining a starring role on a TV show for Shirley. But please, by all means, let's go with the poltergeist who can write.
It should be the poltergeist that can talent manage. Because that's incredible. Just by the idea of looking for opportunities for your client in that way.
Yeah, the lost...
Ken's done jack shit of that.
The lost boy king. There's so many different titles and angles you could go with. The mysterious case of the fire-setting poltergeist. That could also work, but no.
Grandma killer inside grandma's daughter.
The fact is, it's a prince is like the most unbelievable part of all of it to me.
Sure.
You know, just like, why is it always like, whenever you talk about the afterlife or like people's past lives, it's always like, you were Abraham Lincoln. It's never like you were just some dude.
You know, I think that really comes from, as we'll talk about in this whole case, I think this story of all the various ghosting stories that we've covered is one that is an example of psychic abilities gone rampant. And that I think you're seeing really the projections of a little girl and what they think about historical figures and what they find to be romantic. And that we'll cover, obviously, as we go, but who knows?
Man, I just can't believe we're going to spend hours on the ramblings of a little girl.
I do it every night. I pore over young Greta's journals, looking for the key to her heart.
You still think she's the Antichrist?
No, I think Greta Thunberg is like, well, I do think she's an Antichrist, but I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Move it along, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get to the next
one. Yeah, move it on. Move to the next post.
Now, for our source today, we used a fascinating book called The Poltergeist Prince. Much better title.
Yes. Yes.
Very catchy. It was co-written by James Clark and the person at the center of this entire haunting, Shirley Hitchings, who filled in the gaps for Clark decades after all this happened.
The poltergeist formerly known as Prince is right there.
It's just like a symbol that's like a little ghost.
Yeah, it's right there.
It's just a Pac-Man ghost.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's incredible.
Well, as of the Poltergeist Prince's release in 2017, Shirley was still maintaining that everything we're about to discuss was solely due to the attachment of an extremely active poltergeist named Donald. But we'll, of course, as we said, leave it up to you to decide whether or not that was actually the case. I myself find this case to be extremely compelling. There's a lot of cool shit here.
It's got legs!
It's very thick!
Yeah. Now, unlike the tale of the Enfield poltergeist, in which the haunting's victims were a working-class single mother and her two daughters, the story of the Battersea poltergeist occurred in the financially stable home of an only child. The address of the haunting, number 63 Wycliffe, was said to be nice and typical, with a backyard and a converted air raid shelter left over from the London Blitz, which wasn't too long before all this happened. By 1956, however, that shelter just held chickens.
And that's why it's good, because a lot of times you got to make sure you get your chickens all prepped to work them for the wintertime, because, you know, most chickens on Wycliffe Street are gone till November.
Man. It's pronounced Wycliffe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm. Yeah. Sorry.
The great hero, Wycliffe. <Yeah. laughs> I hope people call their Shirley chickens.
Yeah.
Cute.
No.
That's Shirley Chickens. No, Shirley Chickens. That man bought Shirley Chickens.
John, my name is Shirley Chickens.
You own Shirley Chickens.
Well, the two-floor home was occupied by 15-year-old Shirley Hitchings, her 51-year-old mother, Kitty, her 47-year-old father, Wally, and Wally's long-suffering 73-year-old mother, Ethel.
Won't somebody kill me?
I've seen 2 centuries now, and I think I'm done.
It's been quite dramatic 100 years, and I certainly wish to exit this life.
The Hitchings also had a 20-year-old adopted son living at number 63 Wycliffe. But this brother is largely missing from the Battersea poltergeist story because he absolutely refused to speak about or even acknowledge the haunting while it was happening. Nor did he talk about it to anyone afterward.
I'll fucking know these people.
This is understandable because as it goes, almost any time someone claims that a spirit is communicating with the world of the living, this story does get incredibly silly from time to time. Don't believe the movies. When a spirit actually communicates with people, it's always kind of stupid.
Yes, and the ramifications of going to the media and telling the world that this stupid stuff is happening inside of your home and you're taking it seriously makes the whole world destroy your family. And that's why he's very understandable. He might not want to be involved.
Yeah.
My problem with like Ouija boards and all that shit, I just don't believe that ghosts remember how to spell.
They don't need to.
Well, we'll actually address that later on in the story.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, this story is Enfield meets Jeff the Talking Mongoose, except in this case, instead of a foul-mouthed weasel, the communicating spirit was an aggressive teenage French prince from the 1700s obsessed with young heartthrob celebrities.
As he would be.
As he would. Possibly. Quite possibly, yeah.
A French prince.
Yeah.
The level of gay you become as a French prince must be incredible.
Well, I just can't wait till we finally do the French Revolution. God. We can get all of your thoughts on the French just out in the open.
I just think about it, just like him covered in creams, the little beauty mark drawn on his face.
How old is he supposed to be, the French prince?
15.
15, man. So I, you know, not to sound like an asshole, I don't care. Nothing's more annoying to me than French spoken by children.
Yeah. It's all like, you think you're fucking better than me? When you hear it at Disney, and they're like, Mama, Monsieur Le Polacoso. It's like, shut the fuck up. Oh, this fancy little French child. Oh, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, fucking speak English like a real baby.
Oh, what are you going to do? You're going to rape the president of France or something? God knows what you do.
Now, there was really nothing out of the ordinary about the Hitching family. But in January of 1956, the haunting kicked off when Shirley mysteriously found a key in her bed that didn't fit any of the locks in their home. A few days later, the telltale knocks and taps that signified the beginning of a poltergeist haunting began. The noises faded during the day but returned in the evening and were sometimes paired with scratching that sounded as if something with claws was trying to break through.
Santa Claus.
Sorry.
Sure. Eventually, the noises became so loud and all-pervasive that the family was kept awake night after night, but the majority of the taps, knocks, and scratches were clearly coming from the bedroom of the Hitchings' 15-year-old daughter, Shirley.
Menarche.
Now, Shirley was more or less the archetype of the haunt. Have you got all your Menarche out?
That's all I did. That's, yeah. I just said it once. I just did it one time.
That's, I know, but
she's
that's
probably
insane.
Had 5 Menarches at this point.
Yeah. You can only have one Menarche.
Well, I'd
claim. Isn't that the definition? I thought the
Menarche is the first one. The Menarche is the starting pistol to being miserable.
So you can only have one by definition.
Yep. Yeah.
Surely it can't be a Menarche.
Thank you. Now we're getting back to being classic.
But Shirley was more or less the archetype of the haunted 15-year-old girl. Physically, she was slim and pretty with dark hair, while her personality was described as quiet and shy, but extremely high-strung. She was also imaginative, And like her poltergeist Donald, Shirley was obsessed with young TV actors. Shirley, however, struggled in school because the other thing Shirley shared with Donald was that they both seemed to be dyslexic. See, as I said, Donald was the poltergeist who writes, and it just so happened that Donald and Shirley both tended to flip letters in the words they wrote.
Yeah, it didn't say the poltergeist who writes well.
No, just the poltergeist who writes.
He just writes.
For example, they spell the word what, W-A-H-T,
what?
Instead of W-H-A-T.
What?
What? As far as Shirley's parents went, they also appeared to be archetypes straight from a British B-movie. Like, I could see Christopher Lee showing up somewhere in this story. Shirley's father, Wally, he was a straight-laced steam engine driver and a train conductor. But Kitty,
I go choo-choo, but I will not go woo-woo. It's extremely important. So one must remain one's composure when driving the choo-choo train.
Unfortunately, I have murdered accidentally 6 train spotters this month.
We must be on time. Remove yourself from the tracks.
But Shirley's mother, Kitty, she was described as elderly at the age of 51. Due to a crippling case of arthritis, Kitty hobbled around the Hitchings home on walking sticks. Both parents, however, were strict adherents to the teachings of the Church of England and had no knowledge of spiritualism or the paranormal prior to this haunting. In fact, Wally was certain that the taps and knocks had a physical explanation when they began, believing they were most likely due to faulty electrical wiring in the house.
To be a strict adherent to the teachings of the Church of England, is that like being like a huge like soccer fan in Canada or something like? It's like one of those
no,
things
they're where, in England,
but it's like kind of it's the low rent one, right?
Isn't
no, that like the low like what is the commitment to the Church of England?
The Church of England is the same church that the Queen adheres to, the same church that
but
many.
But did she just get rolled? And go, oh,
Ned.
And then get rolled out.
Yeah, it's like no divorce. You can't have divorce. That was a big thing. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Is that the King James Bible? Is that officially Church of England?
I don't know.
We'll say it is. Yeah.
We'll say it is. Moved on, confidence.
Also,
roll forward like the trains must roll.
Also, if there's a lot of knocking in your house and you're like, oh, it's just the faulty wiring, you got to check that out.
Well, them being a part of the Church of England, I actually think it's a really important part to the story.
Oh, I bet.
Because, you know, they are haunted by this poltergeist. It does, and it, you know, torments them for 12 years. But being a part of the Church of England, it makes them very reticent to use any methods that may be deemed as Catholic. So they're
got
not.
Got you by the fucking balls anyway.
Yeah, so they can't. They're not going to be bringing in a priest to take care of any exorcism. They're going to keep calm and carry on throughout the whole fucking thing.
You should be good out there. You enjoy yourself a bit of a roast there, ball.
King James Bible, English translation commissioned by the Church of England.
Fuck great. Yeah. So. Yes. Yes. Now, after ruling out electrical problems, he looked into it immediately. Wally and Kitty naturally began blaming their daughter, Shirley, for the noise. To test her, they forced Shirley to keep her hands where they could see them. They could stare at her. But the noises continued without any apparent movement from the teenage girl.
I'm showing you my wrist tops, Daddy. I'm showing you everything I've got.
Well, flabbergasted, Wally began talking about the noises to his coworkers, and amongst his fellow train conductors was a spiritualist and amateur medium in his 50s named Harry Hanks. And so, when Hanks's hobby suddenly appeared before him in the real world, he quickly volunteered to drive away whatever was causing the disturbance.
Never tell anybody at your work that your home is haunted.
Yeah.
Because every time, there will always be one. There will always be, you're going to see fucking Patty from accounting show up with all of her gems, you know, being like, well, you know, I am a Reiki master. You know, like, you're going to get deeply involved with a coworker that's going to ruin your life.
We need a medium. We don't have one in the office.
I got a bunch of them. I can call them.
We need, well, employ one is what I'm saying.
Amber says she sees ghosts every third day.
Every time she closes her eyes, she sees a ghost. Every time she thinks of a memory of her childhood.
Yeah, she sees ghosts.
We got enough psychics and mediums on call. We don't need one on staff.
No.
All right.
Well, Wally agreed to let Harry Hanks help. So Harry arrived at number 63 Wycliffe in February of 1956, about a month after the haunting began. This visit, however, is the only time I've ever heard of a paranormal enthusiast bringing along his wife and daughter, because paranormal investigation was apparently a Hanks family affair.
That's nice. Normally it's a super weird loner. Like, truly.
And usually families aren't, like, into all into, like, paranormal investigation together. That's not usually, like, the family hobby. Usually it's camping.
Yeah, or getting together and killing another family. Yeah.
Also, I'm picturing Tom Hanks covered in hair, just so everyone else can do the same thing.
You got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank
you. Harry Hanks. So you're picturing Tom Hanks in the
head to toe.
Third act of Castaway.
Yeah. But, like, I want hair on his forehead. No. Like, he's covered in it.
Yeah. Tom Hanks, the dog face boy. I get it.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm trying to figure out Tom Hanks' impression.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Is there a Tom Hanks impression?
That's it.
Okay, thanks.
From your grave.
Now, Harry Hanks and his family performed a couple of seances with the intent of clearing the house of lost spirits. But as it often happens, the activity would stop when the Hanks family arrived and resume only after they left. The Hitchings family, meanwhile, were already at their wits' end due to lack of sleep. Tensions were running high, so in an attempt to lighten things up, they made what is considered a grave mistake in the paranormal community.
Pun intended.
They made, yes, very much intended.
They killed the children.
They made what? Well, actually, if the pun is truly intended, I have to deliver it in the right way. They made what is considered a grave mistake.
Thank you.
A grave mistake they made.
Get out of here, sir. Sir, you get out of here. You get away from this man. He's not a woman.
All right, I'll go back.
You get away from him. It doesn't matter what he looks like. Just because he has a waist under 36 inches, he's not a woman.
He's going to tell you his name's Shirley Chickens. It's not. Well, they gave the poltergeist a name. In fact, they gave it two names. Sometimes they call it Charlie Boy. Other times, they'd refer to the spirit, this is one of my favorite ghost names I've ever heard, as Spooky Willie.
Yep.
Boy, I got Spooky Willie now.
The voice you're doing, now that's Spooky Willie.
Yeah.
Like, that's
Andrew's penis.
But after they named this power, whatever it was, the knocks and taps only grew louder, and the noises were sometimes so intense, the neighbors claimed to have heard them from several houses away. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the Battersea poltergeist story got very intense very quickly. The tapping reportedly attached itself to Shirley and followed her outside of the home. And according to many accounts, the noise, whatever it was, it followed Shirley wherever she went.
This is one of those parts of this case that makes it extremely compelling.
Yeah.
It was everywhere she went.
Yeah.
And I know that it's like, yeah, obviously it's centered around her, but that's what I'm saying. This is psychic ass shit.
Yeah, I mean, she'd go on the bus and people would hear the tap. She'd go to work, people would hear the tap, no matter where she was.
Yeah.
Well, for example, when Shirley went to her job as a dress cutter at a London department store, the tapping was heard there too. But interestingly, the tapping was not seen by her coworkers as an annoying prank being pulled by a teenager. Instead, the noises terrified the other ladies that Shirley worked with.
A dress cutter?
Dress cutter, yeah.
Yeah, like, just show up and be like, could you remove the breasts from the shirt, please?
Yeah! Slice!
Well, things got worse when the poltergeist took a liking to a certain pair of scissors at the department store. Those scissors would reportedly move around on their own. And the activity thus became so distracting that Shirley was asked to take some time off work to figure out her quote-unquote troubles. But as it often goes, the haunting only escalated after Shirley's life began falling apart. In late February, Shirley reported that she was in bed when she felt her sheets being yanked away from her. She called for her father, Wally, who tried tugging them back, but his efforts were reportedly met with an unknown force pulling the sheets in the other direction.
Right, with right, fall away. Up, up, one, two, up, 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 one, two, up, quite the effort.
Well, suddenly, Shirley went fully rigid before she was lifted up. Once lifted, she began floating in the air, just 6 inches above her bed. This story, however, was Wally's recollection of what happened that night, best as I can tell. As Shirley remembered it, her head and feet stayed on the bed while her back arched upward, as if a force was pushing her to do so, all while she cried out that she could not, no matter how hard she tried, straighten herself out again. By the way, remember, this is 1956. All this shit, like, you hear it, you think, like, oh, yeah, you know, I've seen floating above the bed a million times. I've seen the creepy arch, you know, that people do when they're supposed to be possessed. This is long before these sorts of stories became tropes in the worlds of horror or in the worlds of the paranormal.
Largely, it's why they became tropes.
Yeah. So while there are certainly things in this story that very well could have been cries for attention from a high-strung, imaginative teenager, other incidents like this one are more compelling. But, of course, how compelling you find all of this depends on if you believe the people involved.
Or it could be cries for cries for attention from a high-strung, imaginative teenager who also is psychic. Like, literally, like, and like, what happens? What happens if, fucking, you know, when Carrie's in a bad mood, everybody dies?
That's the most infuriating thing about the paranormal is that, you know, two things can be true at once, is that there can be something paranormal going on, and the person can be lying about it.
There could be human shenanigans as well.
Yeah.
What do we know about Papa Wally here? I mean, I know he works.
He literally was desperately trying to just be a train conductor.
Yeah. He's just a regular dude.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what's, you know, because now that he's involved in the sheet-pulling thing, she obviously couldn't have been doing that, so this is...
Yeah, I mean, and that's, again, like, if you believe the people involved, it's like, you, in order for all of this to make sense as a hoax, you would have to believe that Wally was also either lying or... wildly hallucinating it.
Yeah.
Or orchestrating it. But he has, as we'll see, there's absolutely no reason for them to orchestrate this. Now, the British are nothing if not a nation of gossips. So the Battersea Poltergeist became a constant subject of discussion in the neighborhood where the Hitchings lived within weeks of the first occurrence.
Yeah, it's juicy as fuck.
Yeah. Once the public showed interest, the ever-invasive British media arrived just 2 months after it all began. And by March, Wally Hitchings was allowing pretty much any reporter who knocked on his door to come inside his home. In response to the attention, though, the Battersea Poltergeist actually got more active, throwing clocks and lamps to the ground or knocking over chairs. But once the reporters started asking the family questions, they found that while Wally and Kitty Hitchings were God-fearing, button-up Brits, Shirley's grandmother, Ethel, was the witchier member of the family.
I'll answer your questions, three. Yes, nothing's bad in this home.
The cock of a newt.
I have 12.
Actually, could you run out to the store and grab me 4 more?
Cocks of newts.
I get nervous when I get below 15.
I need 20 cocks of the newts.
Well, at 73 years old, Ethel proudly told reporters that during her previous job working at a hospital, she had been able to see the misty essence of a soul leave a patient's body when they died.
I suck it through a straw.
Additionally, Ethel also claimed to see the ghost of her dead husband in her bedroom from time to time. As far as the current haunting went, though, Ethel swore that she'd seen clothes and shoes fly across the room on their own volition, and that hangers on the wall had mysteriously detached themselves and fallen to the ground. In other words, whether the haunting was a tall tale, a shared delusion, or a genuine paranormal phenomenon, the adults in the Hitchings house were all in on this from the very start.
Could have been shitty hangers.
I mean, it could have been shitty everything.
Shitty everything.
Yeah. England in 1956 was not a super nice place to live. Yeah.
It's been hastily rebuilt mm-hmm. since the Blitz.
Oh, God, not even close to being rebuilt. Yeah, like, yeah, it's mostly just rubble everywhere.
So it's
for
very,
like decades.
And I imagine it, who knows? I'm certain they did their best. But so far, yes. Everything could be mostly just British contracting.
Yeah.
But we will get there.
And this happens, though. You know, I always tell Julie to stay away from my flying shoes. You know, I paid more for that, you know? So it's like, stay away from my flying shoes. They're going to fly around the room. And if you get near them, they're going
to
hit you.
Where do you think my flying shoes are supposed to go?
Yeah.
I said in my vows when we got married that you're going to have to take me and my flying shoes.
That's my flying shoes.
Now you want to go back on the promise, huh?
And he just puts his shoes on, stands in the backyard, just going, whoosh, 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 whoosh.
I gotta lose weight. My flying shoes aren't working anymore.
That's fucking stupid.
Now the press ate up every detail the Hitchings gave them. They published every word the Hitchings uttered, and they eventually settled on Spooky Willie as the better of the two names for the spirit was haunting number 63 Wycliffe.
That's who I would have voted for.
Yeah, out of Spooky Willie, or was it Charlie, like... Upchuck Charlie.
We already forgot the other one.
Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah, Charlie Boy. Yeah, yeah. No one likes Charlie Boy, but everyone's gonna hang out with Spooky Willie.
Wouldn't you want to vote for Spooky Willie for like House of Representatives? Like, there's something about like me being like, "Hi, my name's Spooky," but the one thing that's not spooky is my legislation. You know, that's all I'd love to find a guy in a sheet all the time.
Spooky Willie, Libertarian Party Chair.
Can't tax a ghost.
Well, before long, one reporter got the idea that he could set himself apart from the pack by attempting to communicate with the spirit using knocks. One knock for no, two knocks for yes, and three knocks for I don't know. And after working their way through standard questions like, can we help you? And some surprisingly direct questions like, are you evil?
Great question.
He said no.
Yeah. And evil people never lie.
No. Are you evil? Yes, I am.
That'd be fucking terrifying.
Yes, I am. I am, man. Yes, I am.
British band. I actually did think, like, when I was, like, I was wondering if, like, Diamond Head was reading the newspaper that day.
Am I evil? I am, man.
Yeah. Well, the reporter eventually learned that Spooky Willie was actually Shirley Hitchings' great-grandmother, who died in 1916. Or at least... that's what Spooky Willie was claiming.
Spooky Wilma.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spooky Willie, oh, deep inside you, Kramer.
The next Sunday, though, the spirit amended its identity, and not for the last time. While communicating directly with the Hitchings family, the spirit next claimed to be a boy named Ronald that Shirley had played with as a little girl. Ronald, however, had moved overseas with his family, and, as the poltergeist claimed, he had subsequently died and returned as a ghost. Since the story was already being covered in multiple outlets, the press immediately tracked down this Ronald character. He was indeed a real person. But when he was found alive and well, and not haunting a 15-year-old girl in Battersea, London...
Well, not as a ghost.
Something interesting happened. Nobody really knows how, but the poltergeist name soon morphed from Ronald to Donald. The only explanation we could find was that for some reason, Kitty Hitchings thought it was hilarious to call this spirit Donald Duck. But nobody knows why she called him that, or even why she thought it was funny. But after Shirley's childhood friend Ronald was found alive, both the press and the Hitching family quietly began calling the spirit Donald without giving a reason. But regardless of why, the poltergeist took the name permanently, and for the next 12 years, he was known as Donald the Poltergeist.
See, Donald, yeah, it sounds like Donald said yes to the name.
Yeah.
And then once they started calling him Donald, the way I kind of interpreted it, it almost kicked up activity in a way. And they would, like, learn to do, because, like, they're all sitting, they're building a tulpa. They're all sitting in a house. If you really want to believe in some woo-woo part of the story at all, they're building a tulpa inside the house.
Their feet, whatever, like, whatever psychic energy was created here, if you believe in that, they're just sitting there and feeding it. And there are people constantly coming into the house, reporters, feeding it. And not just that, the reporters are then taking what they're feeding it and they're publishing it in London. And, you know, thousands upon thousands of people are reading this every day, giving more power to it, you know, and it just keeps increasing.
And once you become a ghost, you can really start to reinvent yourself.
Formerly known as Prince. He's Jehovah's Witness in heaven.
The Spooky Willie thing ain't working. I was working with Ronald for a little bit, but then I talked to my manager, and we're going with Donald.
Yeah, what's his name? It's like, was it that Mankind used to be Hacksaw Jim Duggan or one of Cactus Jack?
Cactus Jack and Dude Love. Yeah,
they change all the time. People change.
Now, it was obvious to everyone involved that this spirit wanted to communicate. So the Hitchings family ended up making a kind of homemade Ouija board with pen and paper so they could actually get answers beyond yes or no. After writing out all the letters of the alphabet, they could move their finger from letter to letter until they heard a knock. And with each knock came a letter. That letter was written down until it spelled a word. And then finally, they would end up with a full message.
So boring!
This tedious technique became the main method of communication that Donald the Poltergeist would use to communicate with the Hitchings family, the press, and various paranormal investigators over the next 12 years. Sometimes while objects were actively being thrown around in the very room while they were taking the message. Sometimes they would have to duck while they were listening to knocks, or at least so they say.
Well, it's probably they picked the wrong letter. And the girl's like, go fuck yourself. I said N, not M.
M as in Mary.
But no, I wonder, this is one of those things about the story, is that there's so much activity.
Yeah.
And everybody, it's all these reporters going in and saying they're getting things. I do believe they would have tried anything to debunk it as well. They all love exposing liars. Everybody loves exposing liars. So they're in this state and they're really just watching things zip around a house, but it almost becomes like they're used to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. They do describe it as becoming routine very quickly.
Yeah.
Now, when full messages began to be passed from the spirit world to our own, the interest in the press only got larger, and the typical sleaze that is inherent within the British press increased with the attention. One paper, the South London Advertiser, ran a story that the poltergeist was actually an undead suitor whose ultimate goal was to marry the 15-year-old Shirley. But even though that story is fucking stupid, the people of London loved any story about Donald the Poltergeist. But the more the story was reported in the press, the more that regular people would show up to the Hitchings home to see what they could see. So many people showed up that Wally would sometimes have to chase them off his lawn himself amidst a storm of piss-offs and leave-us-alones.
It's interesting that it's very common, even more than an American society, it almost feels like, for everybody to show up at a haunting in the UK.
Yeah, they just gotta go. They just like to go look at it. Are they just look at the house. Sometimes they'll go like, and knock on the door and be like, can I come in?
Do you think it's because they have like kings and queens and stuff that they feel like ghosts are like their friends or their relatives? Like they actually can go and see a ghost and be like, hey, yeah, I love it, and like throw something at it.
This is 1956. This is back when the royal family was still very much apart.
That's what I mean.
I don't think so. I think at this point hauntings are very much a part of the culture, I think.
Yeah, I guess there's just so many people die there.
Yeah.
It's of like very, everything.
It's an extraordinarily haunted country.
Yeah, there's thousands of years of ghosts there.
And it's like a little island, and it's all filled with the secrets of the Celts.
Yeah, America's just got a couple hundred years of ghosts.
But man, we ooh, made up for lost time.
We really did it.
Yeah. Although Gettysburg? Oh. not as a nice old pile of ghosts there.
Now, not to derail us too much, but didn't we cover something on Side Stories that all the ghosts in England are like dying because they're too old?
They're talking about stuff like the Borley Rectory. Mm-hmm. These certain famous ghosts are sort of going away. They are saying that they don't really understand why, and they do believe that there's something to the idea of a battery is running out and then it gets refilled.
I still am down with my theory that it's a Wi-Fi that's killing the ghosts.
Yes.
Wi-Fi and electricity, you know, because if we are electromagnetic beings, and maybe if there is some sort of, you know, electromagnetic, you know, element to ghosts or hauntings or something like that, Wi-Fi is not going to be kind to it.
Yeah,
it's really going to fuck things up. If you ask, people used to see ghosts all the time. Why don't we see them anymore? You know, why is it that everybody has a phone in their pocket and yet there is, you know, nobody can catch anything, you know, on camera? It's possible that they've all gone away.
Ghosts just want dial-up.
Yeah, because that's actually my biggest fear, is that when we die in the past, that our souls went into some sort of collective unconsciousness, but now when we die, our souls just sort of get trapped and scrambled by the electricity in the air.
Unless you get buried in a casket made out of carbon fiber.
Yeah, that's only if you die in a casket made of. You got to be buried alive in it.
That's what I'm going to do.
To me or to you?
No, I'm going
to
get my ghost off the grid.
Hell yeah.
That's
man.
The only way to do it. I'm going to be a sovereign citizen ghost. That's the only way to do that. Dude. But also, I feel like this is my reach out. If you go visit the Borley Rectory with your family, will you please tragically kill them in a way that leaves a lot of unfinished business and bring some tourism back to the Borley Rectory?
Yeah, please do. But there was a paradox with Wally talking to the press. Because while Wally would chase off looky-loos any chance he got, he seemed to say yes to pretty much any media request, and every bit of media coverage only brought more people to his home. Shirley was even featured in a segment on the BBC. And while you might begin thinking at this point that the Hitchings were angling for cash here, that appearance on the BBC gave them the only profit they ever gained over the course of this 12-year affair. The Hitchings family were never paid by reporters for any of the newspaper articles. And for the BBC segment, which aired just a couple of months after all this began, and you know, and the whole thing lasted for 12 years after that, Shirley was paid just £3, which is the modern equivalent, about $85.
But I think this is a telling a little detail about this story and the fact that most of the time when the people report to the news that they see a ghost, right? Like all of this kind of flurry of activity happens. And then you kind of see it die out a lot of the times, right? Like you see them kind of like have a moment. And then a lot of times the person that's the center of the activity ages out. But this one just keeps going past the point of it making any form of sense for you to keep fucking talking.
Yeah.
And £3 was the weight of the BBC?
Oh.
That's if you include the balls.
We took you to England. We took you there.
I didn't watch the fucking news.
Nah. He was afraid that it would make him gay. He's like, an entire channel dedicated to BBC? I gotta hide my wife's eyes.
Hold on. How much blood is in this sausage?
Now, the story had somewhat leveled off by the end of February, and the answer is a lot of blood in the sausage. Give me more blood in the sausage. Make it grainier. I want it grainier. Give me some mushrooms. Give me some beans.
I like the white.
But when the story somewhat leveled off at the end of February, two reporters decided to up the stakes by pressuring Wally and Kitty into allowing Harry Hanks to perform an exorcism on Donald the Poltergeist. Remember, Harry Hanks is just some guy from work.
Yeah. Hey, how you guys doing?
They agreed, but Hanks, for some reason, decided that it was better if the exorcism was done from the comfort of his own home, located about a mile and a half away from number 63 Wycliffe.
We're going to want to do this in my home exorcism dojo, okay?
We're going to do this in my home, and if you could you just send over your teenage daughter? Don't come with her. Just send her alone, please. You're just in my home.
Leave her shoes.
Yeah. But since Paranormal Investigation was, as I said, a family affair for Harry Hanks, he performed the exorcism with his wife and his daughter, along with a clairvoyant and a spiritualist. Shirley was also present, although she only observed the exorcism to come. Seemingly making it up as they went along, the exorcists held hands and sang a couple of hymns, like as they sang Onward Christian Soldiers. Then they fell into silent prayer. Suddenly, though, Harry's wife entered a trance and began shaking. Harry soon entered a trance as well, contorting his face and waving his arms around like a madman. A loud knock then came at the door, and when they opened it, they found the police, who had gotten an anonymous tip that a black magic ritual was being performed at that address.
What's all this? Hey, we're looking for a wizard, then? We're looking for a bit of a witch covenant. It's me, Smart Daughter. It's my daughter.
Spooky Willy. Spooky Willies.
Hey, you got it up.
The cops. Who calls the cops on a black magic ritual, and what cops come out for that?
An old British bitch.
Yeah. Is it even illegal?
No.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes, it is. That was a part of
that's right. Witchcraft was illegal in the UK until what, like, yeah, the 50s, right?
Like the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s,
They went through a whole thing because that was with the Highgate Vampires. That also came out, too. Like, they literally, it was very illegal. These are like old shit.
So
old
one day, rules. There was a dude in British Parliament just like, you know what? We need to legalize witchcraft.
Yeah.
He probably came in the mouth of a goth woman the night before and realized what he fucking did, and he had to figure it all out.
Listen, guys, we're going to need to legalize this witchcraft now. Because if we just lock me up.
Well, after observing what was going on for just a few minutes, the police decided that this was all harmless.
Oh, he's stupid then.
They gave Harry the go-ahead to resume, so the exorcism picked back up where it left off.
Hi!
Harry Hanks once again began shaking violently, but unexpectedly, Harry's consciousness was very suddenly overtaken by a so-called African spirit guide.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. See, this was England in 1956, so the African spirit guide had the incredible racist name of Sambo.
Oh, boy.
And And Harry Hanks, a white British train conductor in his 50s, began speaking in an over-the-top black guy voice.
Eddie, please provide the example.
But, I really wish I could have seen this. We all would. We all do. Everybody would have been super happy with him being like, all right, then, you want to make like a tree and leave there. You crass-ass motherfucker.
How long was he just like, all right, how, you know, I'm just going to sit here and watch this and be polite for a while.
This is the style of thing, though. Like, we always joke about, like, the Xenu reveal and stuff like that. These guys are so serious. Like, Wally's so serious that these guys are, that's what's awesome about this scene, is the fact that it is deadly serious.
Yeah.
And he is talking in a full-on, like, blackface, like, talking at the family.
He's using a minstrel show black man
voice. They're taking it deadly seriously. Yeah. They're all sitting there like, I hope my daughter lives. Wonderful.
But before long, Harry, speaking as Sambo, he declared the exorcism was a success. The spirit-haunting Shirley...
And how would that sound?
The spirit-haunting Shirley had been driven away, and Sambo had placed a psychic barrier around Shirley to protect her from future hauntings. This being England, they then all had tea, and Shirley went home satisfied. Now, it seems like the exorcism had worked, because there were no knocks or taps that night. The Hitchings, therefore, slept for the first time in almost 2 months, and it might have all been settled then and there if not for the meddling of the British media. See, there were two reporters from a paper called The Weekend Mail who were convinced that Shirley had fabricated the entire story. And so they arrived at the Hitchings house the day after the exorcism to convince Wally and Kitty to let them take Shirley to a hypnotist. And they said the hypnotist is going to get to the bottom of this whole story.
You remember this also happened in Enfield?
Yes.
They do this too. They do a lot of bringing little girls into a room alone with a hypnotist.
They really love it. Now, Wally and Kitty agreed to the reporter's ask, although no reason is given why. Perhaps it was because hypnotism was getting a lot of positive press in England in the 1950s, and the hypnotist that the reporters had picked was indeed a recognized member of the British Society of Medical Hypnotists. Apparently, the British Society of Medical Hypnotists had been founded by the same man who had been responsible for the passing of the Hypnotism Act of 1952 in British Parliament, which had set regulatory standards for using hypnosis in medical practice. So, for Wally and Kitty, this probably all seemed like it was on the up and up.
A one, a two, a three, your knees are now your feet. One, two, three, your ears are now your lips.
And as you can all now see, charlatans such as this is why we need regulation in the hypnotism industry.
Okay, now bark like a cat.
But as it turned out, taking Shirley to a hypnotist was the wrong move. Shirley refused to relax when the hypnotist told her to.
Relax!
And she wouldn't watch the pendulum he was swinging.
Look at the goddamn pendulum! I don't know why you won't fucking relax! You set the meeting with me! God damn it! Relax! Look at my eyes! Calm down!
She also constantly fidgeted. She patted her face to stay awake. So all the so-called hypnosis standards utterly failed that day.
Wow.
But because Shirley was so uncooperative, the reporters who had brought her to the hypnotist gave up the story as a bust and drove Shirley home. But that night, the knocking and tapping returned louder than ever. And a framed photograph was even flung across the room where it struck Kitty Hitchings in the back. Supposedly, it was flung completely of its own volition. Nobody was around.
What was the picture of?
Didn't say. I wondered too, but they didn't say.
It's important information.
It really is. No, they didn't say.
There's lots of pictures. Unless it's
probably a train.
Yeah. Probably something like, you know, in British people.
Never bring your work home with you.
See, right? Yeah, it's been like, would you be sick of trains?
Yeah.
I mean, when you see a boat.
Yeah, like if you were to walk around my house, like I don't think you'd say that, like, oh, because my house, it's not like it's all like chains and blood and bones. There's some bones, but not a lot.
I mean, you're all
no more than like the average man.
I think that I'm frightened just by the vibe of it.
Yeah,
of your home.
Yeah,
but for me, same.
Yeah,
I mean, you come to my home. What do you expect to see in my home?
You have a ghost in your home.
I do.
Yeah.
I also do have a lot of scary imagery.
Yeah. Your home's actually upsetting.
That's the idea.
The children cry in your home.
Good.
When I had to explain to the children that the cheddar goblin was like our friend.
Honestly, it helps. I think it helps them.
Now, by the estimation of Harry Hanks, the two reporters and the hypnotist had demolished the protective aura that his African spirit guide Sambo had placed around Shirley.
Oh, yes, that magical, wow, I'm certain.
Yeah. A second exorcism, however, proved to be unsuccessful. And eventually, Harry Hanks, who, again, is
just...
So then
he got to the Asian guy, right? And then he did the Asian guy. Then they did the whole... Man, I can't wait till they got to... Because once he did the Italian, German, Japanese, like, that's funny. Yeah.
Well, eventually, Harry Hanks, who, again, is just some guy who worked with Shirley's dad...
He's a train conductor.
He decided...
A deeply racist train conductor. I thought I also realized he's probably... trying all the voices while he's doing the announcements on the train. So, you know, like, oh, fuck, I can't do any of them.
That's all right. Sorry, buddy.
It's good to do. No, it's good.
Yeah. Self-control. It's good. Well, Harry Hanks eventually decided that Shirley was a natural medium who had attracted a second earthbound entity. Now, Shirley was convinced that the spirit haunting her was still Donald, still the same old poltergeist. But Harry Hanks sat this teenage girl down and tried to convince her that she was being actively haunted by the spirit of an adult woman from the neighborhood who had died in a horrific suicide years earlier.
She was so sad that her breasts were too large.
Just imagine that this train is man in his 50s sitting down like a little girl like, no, unfortunately, I do have to tell you that you are being haunted by the ghost of a suicide, and I really want you to accept that there's a woman that is haunting your room who has died by suicide.
And what I need you to know is that her soul was absolutely so desperate, so absolutely filled with malaise. She ran a razor across a carbon artery and allowed the blood to sleep forward. Just became a green, rotting corpse. And now her spirit lies in this very room.
Let me get my drums.
Excuse me. The choo-choo is calling, actually. I'm super late. Choo-choo sitting at the station.
Harry's exorcisms, however, stopped when Harry decided that Shirley's psychic abilities were simply too strong, and until she got her powers under control, she was likely to keep attracting new spirits just as soon as he got rid of the old ones. Sambo here was powerless.
Live from your grave.
Now, by March, the two skeptical reporters from the Weekend Mail had settled on an angle to discredit Shirley Hitchings. See, one of Shirley's hobbies was ballet. And like most ballerinas, she developed a deformed hammer toe. And for some reason, during the visit to the hypnotist, the reporters had insisted that Shirley remove her shoes.
Gross.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if they had maybe they had a hunch about the hammer toe, but they said, like, if this is going to work right, you've got to take off your shoes.
Well, we know that this is all connected back to the Fox sisters.
Mm, yeah.
That's where it came from with the shoes.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah. Because they famously faked tappings and knockings using the joints of their feet, of their toes.
Right. Well, the thing is, the reporters had seen Shirley's deformed big toe.
They're like, I know that big old toe, make big old ghost noise.
And we know that hammers knock.
Yeah, and they'd noticed that the toe made a loud cracking sound whenever Shirley moved it. According to the reporters, the cracking of her big toe sounded just like the taps supposedly being made by Donald the Poltergeist. So these stalwarts of journalism published a full article about this teenage girl's ugly foot and titled it, Spook Was in Girl's Big Toe.
Girls love that shit. Nothing helps a 15-year-old girl's life than focusing on her ugliest part in the news.
Yeah, full front page newspaper
of
article.
Of your worst part of your body.
Yeah.
It was all just like, Henry Zebrowski's belly button is a mess. Do you see his belly button caused what's happening in Gaza?
And also, he's a liar. But rather than kill the poltergeist story, the toe angle only introduced more intrigue and speculation, which of course made the story even bigger. Now you had something to argue about. Is it her big toe? Is it real? And after the so-called big toe story, no less than 12 newspapers were reporting on the Battersea poltergeist. And amongst all the reporters working on the story was a dashing young man named Michael Kirsch. Now, since Shirley was just 15, she was pretty quick to develop crushes, and she started crushing on Michael Kirsch soon after he started reporting on the story. Michael, in turn, realized that if he gave Shirley extra attention, if he nurtured this crush a little bit, he might be able to get a few more details that could give him a scoop on Shirley's specter.
I tell you what, if you're how I wish I was a nail, to be subject to your hammer toe. I'd love your delicious little horrible crooked feet.
Never help a 15-year-old's crush on you.
No, never. Don't cultivate that. Not for a story in the news. But on the other hand, as we all know, British journalists have no ethics.
None. They're a little bit more adventurous over there.
What is wrong with them?
They've got different rules.
Yeah, they got different rules, and those rules are no rules. Yeah. Like there's like it's a go hard as hard and as fast as you can to get the story, no matter what. Like they are, goddamn, the British press are vicious. Yeah. And so, right around the same time that the Big Toe article was published, Donald the Poltergeist communicated its longest message yet. This message, recorded letter by letter using the homemade Ouija board, would mark the beginning of a barrage of letters dictated through taps by Donald.
It was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Blast of times! Stupid poltergeist! Now, this first big letter was somewhat nonsensical, but it did have some clues as to what the motivation for this whole thing was and where the poltergeist story would eventually go. It read, quote, and please, Henry, verbatim.
I am 15. I come from France. Lost in Channel. Cannot remember name. I had a girl like you. Donald is not aware of me. I want someone to tell him. I want the happiness between you two.
It's French. Keep it in French. You're going to Italian.
I want the happiness between you two.
Oh, yes, sir. I won't go till I made it, sir.
Really delicate balance here.
Let me go.
You got to keep going. Keep going.
C'est le pour que le... Let me go happy by telling Ronald or me, but not tell his family. He must keep me a secret between you and me and to himself. Give this to Kirsch. Let no one see it. Get Kirsch, you, but keep a secret. If give to father, be angry and set fire.
Whoa!
Yeah. Now, the important points of this that message were that the ghost came from France.
Uh-huh. He comes from France.
Yeah, he comes from France, like the Coneheads. He's going to set fire if his he's going to set fire to something. If
and
his
going instructions to set the fire are, blast.
Yeah, if his instructions are followed, it's going to be fire. And finally, it wanted the letter given only to the handsome young reporter, Michael Kirsch.
And I want you to fold it up, and I want you to place it ever gently, sir, into his front pocket so that the message can touch the shaft of his penis.
And please, if you can tap his bottom,
please,
twice upon delivery of the letter.
I would like to give him kisses.
Kirsch, however, seemed to be the main factor here. And the request came, as they often did, with increased poltergeist activity. The evening after that message was given, Wally and Kitty reportedly saw Shirley's slippers floating 3 feet above the ground, walking in the air by themselves as if something invisible was wearing them.
My flying shoes.
Yeah.
It's my flying shoes.
Later that night, Kitty was woken up by what felt like fingers on her back. And those fingers were paired with insistent tapping. Donald obviously had another message. But when Kitty translated it using the homemade Ouija board, she found that the message was not for her. Instead, it said, quote,
get Kirsch. Get him out of bed.
Now, after the Kirsch request, Donald the Poltergeist reportedly began writing messages himself. Messages that showed up on scraps of paper or written on the walls. Eventually, the messages became so prolific that the family actually got Donald a journal to write in. Supposedly, when no one was in the room, Donald would write in the journal using long, straggling characters that barely came out as words. Although, for some reason, the spirit's handwriting would vary in quality throughout the 12-year haunting. Now, amongst believers, there is speculation that Shirley would become possessed by Donald, and she would black out whenever Donald wanted to actually write down messages. She was Donald's hand. But it was said by investigators that Donald and Shirley had entirely different styles of handwriting when those samples were laid out side by side. Now, since Harry Hanks's exorcisms had failed, and since the Hitchings were a staunchly Church of England household, no Catholic funny business here, they had more or less resigned themselves to accepting Donald the Poltergeist as a part of their lives. Ain't nothing to do. It is. I really do think it's like this Blitz mentality. It's, you know, this is 1956. Yeah, I think there is a keep calm and carry on mentality of like eventually it's going to end.
Just another thing. Yeah. Another thing on the pile.
But one day, a man appeared at their door in the great tradition of British paranormal investigation cold calls. A man who thought he could help. This man, who would eventually give the Battersea Poltergeist its worst name, the Poltergeist Who Could Write, was paranormal investigator Harold Chibbitt.
Another Harry?
Harry Chibbitt.
So much British shit going on.
Want to meet Harry Chibbitt.
You don't want to see Harry's Chibbitts.
Yeah.
But I think that Harry Chibbitt is a... wonderful
Harold, please.
Harold. Yeah. Yes. I think old Harry Chibbitt's his example of the consummate UK paranormal investigator is almost untouched.
Oh, yeah. Pipe smoking.
Oh, yeah. He looks good.
Blobby.
Three-piece suit. Mm-hmm. Every day, fully dressed. It's like they wear so much material. They're so afraid of their penis escaping.
Yeah.
It's like, why? It's like their genitals are in like maximum security prison.
They refuse a wife.
It's the wool and the tweed. They love wool and tweed. The uncomfortable, itchy, itchy it's also material.
They like a stiff cut. They like a jacket that can hold its shape.
Mm-hmm. Now, Harold Chibbitt was in his mid-50s by the time of the Battersea Poltergeist. Like many men of his generation, he'd become deeply interested in spiritualism and psychical research after he'd served in World War I.
And he wasn't a train conductor.
He was...
which, honestly, really, it helps.
A step up.
As such, he'd founded a group that investigated psychic and occult phenomena. And since Chibbitt was absolutely terrible at naming things, he named his new group The Probe. But during his time with the Probe, Chibbitt became a follower of the Fortean school of paranormal research, meaning that he believed that it was his job to observe and document paranormal phenomena, but never interfere. This, of course, is impossible when you're basically living with a family. The guy who that studied the Enfield Poltergeist, he found the same thing. If you're there all the time, you're going to get involved. And as it went, Harold Chibbitt more or less embedded himself with Shirley and the rest of the Hitching family not too long after he introduced himself.
In the Fortean style, they know that the paranormal phenomena itself is extremely subtle and personal. And so the idea is to be there 24/7.
Yeah.
So you can record every single thing. And like, I love Harry Chibbitt's style of this because he really just like, that's the idea, is to record it all and let the whole world sort it out.
I'm not convinced he's not homeless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. So, this is wonderful, magnificent. Is this hot water? Oh, that's just happening. It's simply wonderful. This food is excellent. Oh, is this what do you call this? A blanket?
Now, the Hitching family invited Harold Chibbitt into their home, as they did with pretty much anyone who knocked on their door. It really did seem like, I can't figure out, it seems like it's a compulsion with Wally Hitchings. Anytime someone shows up and says, like, hey, I didn't, he just is like, all right, come in.
My take is the fact that these people are showing up in like a idea of authority and they're showing up as like, we're here to investigate and we are here to report on this. And he's like so British, he always has to go, yes, of course, welcome, yes, tea, biscuits for everyone, yes, of course. Because they're just like locked into every form of social cast.
Terminal politeness.
Yeah.
But the arrival of the middle-aged, portly, pipe-smoking paranormal investigator seemed to elicit an aggressiveness in Donald the Poltergeist.
Of course.
See, Harold Chibbitt was not an attractive man.
Well, he's a specific look.
Well, the world of Fortean paranormal investigators, it's not full of heartthrobs.
No, it's for the woman who loves a difficult personality. It's like an exotic nut.
A difficult personality and, let's call it, a unique body.
Like durian fruit of men.
Well, Harold Chibbitt was not an attractive man, as opposed to, say, the dashing young reporter, Michael Kirsch.
Mm-hmm.
So, Donald began making threats, saying that there, quote, wouldn't be a tomorrow if someone didn't bring Michael Kirsch back to the house. Now, the family refused to contact Michael Kirsch, but Donald ended up blaming the reporter himself for not showing up. In the typically belligerent British poltergeist style, I don't know why British poltergeists are more belligerent, they just are, Donald communicated that he was going to get revenge on Kirsch by, quote, poking him and suffocating him that very night. It's the first really violent threat that Donald the Poltergeist makes.
Well, that and the fire.
But
I'll shit for it.
This is a specific. The fire was like, that's more general. This is like, I'm going to specifically hurt a person.
Yeah. And Donald's like, and I can imagine that Harry Chibbetts is so used to men casually telling him they're going to kill him.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like it's Shirley at this point now, because she's like, I don't like this ugly guy. Get the cute guy back here.
It's interesting.
That's the very interesting part of it, is because it's, as we talk about it more and more, it's going to so very obviously become Shirley. In fact, it's going to become more and more obvious that it's Shirley as the story goes on.
But then the activity, he's also going to get weirder.
Exactly. And that's the thing. The activity gets weirder. The coincidences get weirder. So it just begs the question of, like, where is this actually coming from? And what is Donald? Now, Donald gave up on Kirsch after a few days and instead requested a different reporter named Ronald Maxwell, although this request also came with a threat. If Maxwell didn't show up, Donald wrote, he was going to set the house on fire. While that sounds like an empty threat, both Shirley and Kitty. Yeah, like,
just like from the poltergeist. You know what I mean?
From like, set the bluffing. House on fire. Yeah.
He's fucking bluffing.
Yeah, how many times someone has threatened to set my house on fire this week? Seven.
Seven times. And three different ghosts.
Well, both Shirley and Kitty reported that later on that evening, after Donald made the threat, they both saw green orbs floating in their bedroom. And again, this is 1956. Orbs are not in the zeitgeist.
Okay. It's
not
very much the Poltergeist 2 movie version of, like, you know, when they do that weird energy thing where it moves between all the rooms in the house. Like, it feels like that.
Yeah. Or like the end of Poltergeist, the first Poltergeist, yes. You know, when, you know, the gate gets closed.
Yeah.
This house is clear.
God, I love her.
Yeah. But when the requested reporter still didn't show up, Donald the Poltergeist apparently attacked. One night, around 1 a.m., Shirley said that she saw another green orb, followed by the smell of smoke. She called out for her father, and when Wally burst into the room, he said that Shirley's bedsheets were on fire. He put out the flames, but the fire was big enough where he burned his arms and his hands. The burns were bad enough to take him to the hospital.
Those are his conducting tools. How is he supposed to pull the horn?
Yeah.
How is he supposed to stick his fingers in the mouth of the face of the train?
Or in any boy that happens to be at his stop.
You ever
sitting there, like in New York, were you ever like waiting for the train and the conductor just reaches out and he puts his finger in your mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I always thought that
was like a bad thing. I thought that was like a G train thing.
It's the little things you miss about New York City, you know?
Yeah, I miss that guy, those big guy's fingers.
But before you say that Shirley simply lit the fire herself, Wally's injury triggered an official investigation. The fire investigators were entirely unable to determine how the fire started. They tried, because, you know, this is a famous case. Everyone by this point, everyone in London knows about the Battersea Poltergeist case. You know, these guys are going, they want an explanation. They cannot find one. Furthermore, the whole family was adamant that Donald had done it and that they were all in grave danger. And so it's with Donald's first act of violence that we'll pick our story back up next week for the conclusion to the story of the Battersea Poltergeist. Because next week we're going to be getting into the French Revolution. We're going to be getting some actual deaths, many deaths.
Yes.
Quite a few deaths, actually.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited.
It's going to be pretty bloody.
We really, I can't believe this is the first time I've come across this story. Like, we did.
I'd always heard about it. Yeah. Like, I'd seen it on lists or something. But yeah, it's an insane story. It's a massive story.
And the second half does sort of feel like a psychedelic tumble down into the mind of a 15-year-old psychic girl. So it's going to be very, very interesting.
This happens for 12 years, so eventually she's going to get older, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, does she get married and all that? I guess we'll save it.
Have you seen if she's single? Yeah. Is that the idea?
I'm curious.
We'll find out.
Hey, call us.
I'll tell you this, Eddie. She's still alive.
She's still alive?
She's still alive.
Oh, let's get hitched.
She's British as all fuck.
We're going to patreon.com/lastpodcast11. You can pay money to watch us talk. You can pay watches money to watch us slop back and forth. Most importantly, you can pay money to watch us do last stream on the left live every Tuesday, 6 p.m. PST. And you can join the chat and yell at us. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I am definitely going to say this last episode of the stream, I had a ton of fun, but the majority of it is not making it to YouTube.
That's so funny.
The vast majority of it is, it's one of the funnest episodes we've had in forever, but but it's just the foot sex toy with the vagina on the sole of the foot and the, you know, the mouth. This, we can't show that on YouTube. So the only place you're going to be able to see it is over on Patreon.
Yeah, they have zero tolerance for it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zero Tolerance, for giving us something to have zero tolerance about.
Very much so. And thanks for all the luby. It is really helping me not stick to this chair.
Luby, and also, doo.
Go check out our YouTube channel. We are currently crushing it over there at LPN TV. Our new LPN RPG, Vampire the Masquerade, run by Jared Logan with me, Jackie Zabrowski, Ross Bryant, is, I want to say, you guys are crushing it. All our guests are amazing in it. Ed was a guest like two episodes ago. Marcus is going to be a reoccurring character. He's a reoccurring character.
Oh yeah,
come and watch it. We are having so much fun over on LPN TV. It's on the YouTube, and then also check out our other new LPN, another new LPN based YouTube channels like Someplace Underneath, No Dogs in Space, LPN Romanticy, and The Foreign Report.
Yeah, man, it's a lot of fun over there. Come see us live. Henry and I got a show in Vegas. I'm very excited about that. December 7th, you can catch us out at Wise Guys in Las Vegas.
And also just know, we are performing way off the strip, so please come there. Like, it's going to be nice for those of you that are locals.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's a
past the airport. But we're going to have fun.
We're going to stink it up.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is for the locals.
Yes.
This isn't necessarily for people visiting. And if you are visiting, you can come. But I want some real Vegas idiots.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yes. And you can check out the rest of us on the road. We got Saturday, November 29th, right after Thanksgiving. We're going to be in Akron, Ohio at the Goodyear Theater.
Is it a mistake? We say no.
No, we're doing it. We're doing it. Who gives a shit? I love tires, all right?
We all do.
Check out the video. December 12th and 13th, Portland, Oregon.
Get your tickets fast for Portland, Oregon, because those are selling out.
Yeah, those are going to be gone very soon.
Yeah, Henry and I's show in Columbus sold out, too. So it's happening, folks. Revolution Hall, get in there.
Basically, Portland's already sold out at this point. You can buy the last straggling tickets, but go to Akron. Why don't we all go to Akron for the Saturday after Thanksgiving?
Get River City.
You are going to be so happy to be outside of your home and away from your family in Akron. You just leave whatever home you're at. Leave whatever place you're
at.
Get
the fuck up.
Come from Wyoming. Come from South Dakota.
River City.
There's a lot of places that you could drive from Akron, Delaware.
All right.
A lot of horrible places we'll never go.
Well, the Delaware people, I want you coming to Philadelphia. January 31st, we're going to be at the Met in Philadelphia. That's going to be a big-ass show.
And we're going to do something fun for that, but I don't know what that is yet.
Hell yeah. February 28th, Austin, Texas. March 13th, Indianapolis. April 25th, Cincinnati, Ohio. I can't wait for that. Friday, May 29th, we're going to be in Pittsburgh. June 27th. Grand Rapids, Michigan, July 17th, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and July 18th, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
I cannot believe we're actually in Grand Rapids at an actual normal human time to be inside of Grand Rapids.
Yes.
What nice. What month are we going to be there?
June.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be nice.
We might actually, it's nice there because we went during, the last time we were there was during a snowstorm, and it was honestly a blast.
Huh. But you know what? I have no memory of that.
You weren't there.
Oh.
You were sick.
I was sick. That's right. That's when I had long COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sick again now, but not with long COVID.
Not with long COVID. Yeah.
No, just regular, normal, sick in the head.
So yeah, just normal, unbridled. Strength of 1,000 suns. We love you. Hail sick.
Oh, and hail game. Why not?
I guess hail Harry, the first Harry. Harry Hanks.
Yeah, good work.
Choo-choo man.
Yeah. Hey, can you believe this? Have you ever heard about this?
He just became Jay Leno.
Yeah. You guys heard about this?
Yeah.